Did anybody listen to it?
I didn't get through the entire thing. I fell asleep listening to it one night, and just tonight I tried to skim the second half of it.
Edit that part out.
Take two. Wait. I listened to the whole thing twice.
Did your dog shit?
No, I just brought her in.
She's going to shit on the floor.
Yep. She's going to shit in her crate.
Oh, well, that's all right then. What's your dog's name?
Kiddo.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was like a nickname or the real thing.
Yeah, it's a reference to Kill Bill.
Oh.
I suggested Beatrix, but it was Laura's job to name the dog. She went with Kiddo.
There you go.
Yeah.
What kind of dog is it, may I ask?
It's a lab husky mix, we think.
Oh.
From a rescue. So it's something. It's very cute.
I didn't get husky from the pictures. It didn't.
Yeah. It's kind of like where the white areas are, and especially the eyes are like very striking.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they are. Seems from the pictures that have it's basically all I've seen on the internet for the past couple of weeks.
Yep.
Very chill.
Most of the time. Yes. We just wrapped up a very not chill few hours, so.
Uh-huh.
Hold on, let me find a picture. Here we go. For the show notes.
Have you guys all installed iOS 5 now?
I just did it yesterday.
Woo!
It took like 8 hours.
Yeah, it took a long time.
Yeah, it took all day, but it's awesome.
It's pretty nice.
Reminders.
Okay, so that's your favorite feature?
Yeah.
I haven't actually used that yet.
Oh, it's great.
It works really well.
Yeah.
You can do location-based reminders. You can do repeating weekly or monthly reminders. It's replaced my calendar, basically.
That's really interesting. OmniFocus, which is what I normally use, has added, since iOS 5 came out, some location-aware reminders that it's supposed to work the same way, where it's like the geofencing or whatever the term is called, where it pops up when you either enter or leave a certain radius.
I love that you can do either or.
Well, the kind of annoying thing about the way that OmniFocus has done it is that it's per context, and you set it on that one context if you want it to be either entering, you know, arriving or leaving. So you can't change it per to-do item. It's per context.
Oh,
so if you want to be reminded of certain things when you get to the office or when you leave the office, then you can't do that.
Oh, that's just unacceptable.
It's kind of weird. But the Reminders app is, of course, lets you do that per item. It's kind of cumbersome to enter a new one, though, isn't it? Maybe it's different with Siri.
I don't have Siri.
I don't either.
No, you hit the plus button, you type it, you hit return, and it brings you to the next line. To add another, and then you kind of go back and edit.
Right. So if I just want to say, remind me to, you know, get my leftovers out of the fridge when I leave the office, that's like a 4-step process to do that.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because you have to go back and tap on it and then go add reminder and then location and then find the location, type in the address.
That's why you just got to pay for Siri.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, probably in January is when I'm going to get Siri.
Did you see the Siri talk dirty to me?
No.
it's a lot like that. Hey, you want to hear a dirty joke? Mud puddles or something like that. That she says things along those lines.
I saw a duet with Siri. The guy that's doing the song a day. He did this. It was pretty funny. All her responses for, like, I love you and will you marry me are pretty hilarious.
Uh-huh.
Yes. It's not in the EULA.
Yeah.
So does anybody here have Siri? Because I'm very jealous of everybody who does.
Nope.
I just discovered one thing today. It's just going to underline how way behind everything I am. I mentioned last week when I was talking about the drawings I do on my phone that I was really excited that the drawing app had a Dropbox integration.
Yeah.
And before I was emailing the files to myself. Today I was looking for, because I actually wrote a song on this other app on my phone, and I was trying to get the WAV file off. And the program has like an export function, and it's just like export and save to clipboard. And I was like, my phone has a clipboard? It's like, how do I even get to that? So I was like, okay, I'll paste it into an email. That didn't work. So I went to the support site for the app that I was using, and it was like, yeah, go to iTunes when the phone is plugged in, and you go down to apps, and you've got little file sharing options. And I was like, this has been in here since iOS 3.2. I didn't even know this was here. So like, and right there in that drawing app, under the drawing app, were all of my all of the PSDs that I'd been emailing to myself. So, so anyway, that's something I'm really excited about iOS 3.2.
Speaking of drawing, I just spent a week in New York, and while I was up there, I stayed with my friend who started this thing called the Sketchbook Project.
Oh, yeah?
If you just search Sketchbook Project or Brooklyn Art Library, you'll find that. But you sign up, they send you an empty sketchbook. The ones this year are only 30 pages long. And you fill it out. You mutilate it and go to town on it. Do whatever you want. And you send it back, and then it tours the world. And people you know or people you don't know check it out, and you get notifications every time it's checked out. They digitize every single copy. If you digital version, it might end up in like a compilation of like best ofs. It's very cool. So each book has a theme. It's something that my friend started in Atlanta, and it just really took off. And they went on a tour around the nation and decided to move to the city that had the greatest response. So they're in Brooklyn now.
Wow.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
So yeah, their office was like super inspiring, just beautiful space. And I found a book there called, I think it was 642 Things to Draw. And basically you just flip through. It's a series of cues and, you know, got a couple nice pins and started drawing for the first time in like a decade.
That's great.
Awesome.
But yeah, I totally recommend the Sketchbook Project to everybody. It's a lot of fun.
I'm going to have to do this. So it's like $25 to participate?
Yeah, you get your book, and then eventually it'll come to a city near you. You can go check out yours and see all these others. I got to see a few of their best of pile, like somebody who they believe works at Pixar or DreamWorks. You know, people like that get these, and they just turn them into these beautiful, beautiful works of art.
How do they display them? Are they just sitting out to where you can flip through them, or?
They're all on a shelf and they're all sorted. And as you show up, you sign up for a library card, which is associated with your identity. So that they use that when they check the book out to notify the person that so-and-so has it. So, you'll literally ask by name. You'll have a computer where you can look up what you want to see. And it's all archived.
Wow.
Very cool.
There might be a couple pictures in the tour. There's an album there. I did catch it in Austin this year when I was down there for South by Southwest. They happened to be in on the same weekend. It's really cool. So, yeah. It's drawing.
I like that. I'm going to do that.
Me too.
I need a new sketchbook anyway. I think I'm going to do that.
Yeah. Only $25.
Only $25.
They were using Moleskine, but that's an 80-page thing, and that it just feels so overwhelming that they have licensed. They're making their own. That's only 30 now.
Oh, that's cool.
I had a hard time finishing.
Do you have a set number amount of time or something?
Yes, you'll get it by you need to sign up by the end of October, I believe, and it's due by the end of January.
Oh, okay. I think I could probably do that.
Yeah. Totally.
Totes.
I'll do it too. I should go ahead and sign up after this podcast. That's the first thing I'm going to do.
Who wants to talk about 10K Apart and that awesomeness?
I suggested it, and we all did one week, you, me, and Jason. And none of us won. What's
next? Not even you?
No. What's the next topic?
Both of you guys did.
It was it's very cool. Only I think that it's stacked so that you always lose because I just can't see the pin.
I have used Kale and Steven, both of your apps on my phone.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I've got them saved to my iPhone home screen. Yeah, mine has a pretty iOS icon.
I do wish that Nom Roulette would narrow its results, because a lot of times what it suggests is way across town.
Oh, it'd be nice if you had a slider where you could specify radius or something.
Right.
Yeah, but that did not fit within the 10K, but now that that's over, I can totally make it nicer.
Because, I mean,
version 2?
I have used it a number of times, you know, for its intended purpose. Like, I don't know where I want to go eat.
Awesome.
But it's like, I don't want to go there.
See, I tried it too, and exactly, it didn't actually help me narrow it down so much as it gave me more things to say, oh, no. And then I'd hit it again and again and again, and eventually end up eating by like 1:30. But there's some pretty fantastic winners. Some of these, I'm completely amazed that they are that small.
That's what she said.
Included one. That was a good one. Yeah, so they're all pretty awesome.
Nice. Next.
What is a jingle?
Click that.
It says, this building's totally burning down.
Oh, speaking of this, okay. Steven, meet Phil. Phil, meet Steven.
Hey, Phil.
Hi, Steven.
How you doing?
I'm good. Good.
If I click this, it's going to play, and I don't want to do that right now.
Yeah,
don't do that.
Phil made a little jingle for the podcast that you'll hear if you listen to this week's episode.
Yes.
Nobody
I'm totally excited. I've been really looking forward to that.
It's so cool.
It is.
It reminds me of... Cool. Never mind.
Yes, it reminds you of... Go ahead, just say it. It's already stuck in my head. Might as well give it to everybody else. Give that earworm to the rest of the guys.
I mean, just because of the slide on the guitar, the theme song of Firefly. But not really. But just the slide on the guitar. Kind of. Anyway.
Phil, do you really like bears?
I get that question a lot, you know? I don't have, like, a particular affinity for bears. I just seem to have fallen into the habit of drawing them a lot.
Oh, wait, so these ones on your Tumblr is what I'm seeing. Are these drawings?
No. My personal Tumblr, I just tend to, like, collect things that I like.
Oh, okay, there's, three bear posts on the first page.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I guess I do like bears. I'm always collecting them for like reference material because I draw a lot of bears. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like feel like I have to like things. This sounds really dull. This is going to sound really stupid and shallow, but I feel like I have to like things that have bears because I draw bears. I don't know.
But
keeping an eye on the competition. I don't know. I don't know.
You've been doing the bear thing for a long time.
Can you draw me a bear tattoo?
Ooh.
I can get made.
Sure thing.
How much you charge for a tattoo commission?
I've never done a tattoo.
Can you do that on spec work? Like if I like it, I'll maybe see you.
Totally, yeah. I love spec work.
Uh-huh.
It's my favorite thing to do. It's how I've built my freelance career.
Nice.
Impressive.
I just never miss with spec work. They always end up paying.
My wife likes to say I put the free in freelance.
Oh,
just kidding.
That's a good line. Nice.
I tried to find. We were talking about scrolling in Lion,
mm-hmm.
and how you can't switch it. depending on device, like trackpad or mouse.
I really annoyed the hell out of myself during that part, listening to myself, because I just interrupted you. It's like, you just hit the checkbox.
Yeah.
You just hit the checkbox.
I couldn't find any support for what the hell I was talking about. And in fact, I even found a screenshot of the preferences screen that has, like, there's two separate, there's one for the mouse and one for the trackpad. So I don't know what I heard, when I heard it, where I thought it was on Hypercritical, but it's really a minor point anyway. But anyway, I just wanted to set the record straight that I was obviously smoking crack last week.
Woo!
Yeah. heard a lot about William Shatner over the weekend, and I just thought it was appropriate since we're doing the Star Trek thing. But we listened to Nerdist podcast on the way back from New York. You guys know the Nerdist?
I do not.
No.
Yeah, I've heard of the Nerdist.
Jason!
Hey, guys.
Jason.
Hey.
Sorry, Phil, go on, please.
Yeah, that's okay. it was an interview with Ben Folds, and he spoke a little bit about the album he did with Shatner. That was kind of interesting. But anyway, and then that turned me on. He also mentioned William Shatner's show on A&E or Biography called Raw Nerve. That looks really interesting, and I totally want to watch all the episodes now. It's just it's a one-on-one interview show, and apparently he's really a really good interviewer. So,
huh.
Also, he's 80. That just blows my mind.
What?
Yeah.
He was born in 1931.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
And he's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
He doesn't look 80. Does he?
Oh, well, I was browsing around his YouTube channel last night, and he does look kind of old, but he doesn't look 80 to me. Yeah.
He doesn't act old.
No, he definitely doesn't act old. He's still sharp. I mean, he's not like kind of dull or slow or anything. Mm-mm. Not that all 80-year-olds are, but my grandmother's 85. But anyway.
80 is a lot of years.
It is a lot of years. Then I was watching the episode. I was watching whatever the last one was tonight. And I was just thinking, I was looking at all the people, and I was like, they're all either like dead or really old. And it's just weird. It just weirded me out.
Yeah. How'd the panel go?
The panel was amazing. We didn't expect anybody to show up because it was the last panel on Friday night. But the room was pretty much packed, and we got a lot of good response, and people hung out afterwards and talked to us and stuff. And I think it helped. There were some real rock stars there. Like me and Karen from Life with Tigers, were kind of sitting at the end, and we're both around the same level of like progression in our business. So we've been doing about the same amount of years, and it's still not our full-time job. And next to me was Sean Smith from Seanimals. If you're into toys at all, he's pretty famous.
He does our plushies.
There you go. Nitin from Kid Robot, and Kid Robot. And this was just like their marketing guy. They're like marketing and recruitment guy. Josh Benlongo, who is his stuff is more art, like more like art, but he's huge. He's been in lots of magazines, been in like High Fructose and other big toy magazines, and he does gallery shows and stuff. He's amazing. And Chris from Happy Worker. Happy Workers, they're more of a toy, like a for hire toy maker. They did, I tell people the most famous thing I remember that they did was the mascots for the last Olympics in Canada. They did the little plastic toys for those. But they've done a lot of stuff. But anyway, so like at the end of the other end of the table, it's all these people. And that's probably part of why there was such a huge turnout. I mean, there were some great people to see there. But we all had a good time, and it was really great. It was really great. Great fun. And enjoyable and entertaining, and I hope to get to talk to some of those people again, because honestly I feel like I should have been in the audience asking the questions. But yeah, it was fun.
Nice.
The rest of the con, I think Meg and I, for our first con, we probably did all right, but I think we missed a lot of, we didn't go to any of the cool panels. Like, we didn't get to the Avengers panel. We didn't get to the Walking Dead panel. We saw Felicia Day. That was the coolest thing we went to, which was hosted by Nerdist Chris Hardwick, which we didn't know. So that was cool. And Megan was like, I'm almost more excited to see him. Is that wrong? But we didn't stay in New York. We stayed in New Jersey. And there was a long bus ride away from the con. Not really long. I mean, it was really just the other side of the river, but it was like a 30 minutes an hour bus ride, depending on the traffic. So we didn't have time to like, but it was not easy. Like when you're at a con or a whatever, it's so nice if you can stay close, cause you can just butt out for an hour and go like crash at your hotel room, take a nap, relax, whatever, and get back in time and not miss a lot of stuff. But we just didn't have that option. So, we ended up actually just leaving on Sunday cause we were tired. So we didn't see anything on Sunday. We just came home. Saturday was our day to like walk the floor and get squashed by 1,000 pasty nerds. And see as much as we could. We still missed a lot of stuff, but we saw some cool things. It was a really good panel on intellectual property law. That sounds dry and boring, but the lawyer that was running it was amazing, and he was funny and really really good at just teaching it in a very understandable way. So that was really educational for us. Yeah, that's about it. I don't want to ramble on forever, but we had a good time. So I think we're going to Wendy, who organized the panel that I was on, she's going to try to pitch the panels to San Diego Comic-Con. So keep our fingers crossed we might be in San Diego.
That's the big, big one.
Yeah, that's the big, big one. Apparently too big, some people say, but I wouldn't know.
Do you listen to the Inatco Almanac?
No.
He talked about that in his show this week. I think I mentioned him in a previous episode.
You told me to say hi to him. I didn't run into
him. Yeah, you didn't run into him. Okay.
No.
Anyway, his entire last episode was about New York Comic Con.
Awesome.
And about, yeah, like...
how Hollywood it is?
No, well, he was comparing it to San Diego Comic Con, saying it's a lot easier to deal with. It's a lot less crazy.
Really? Damn.
Apparently.
Because we were overwhelmed, so.
Huh.
Hey, Phil, is there any video of your panel or anything? Do you know?
I don't think so. I don't think anybody was shooting video. I kind of wish there was. I can post all of everybody's PowerPoint presentations.
Yeah.
That would be boring. And I don't even know if I have permission to do that.
Oh, are they? They're not online, or you actually have copies of them?
I have copies because my laptop was like the computer that everybody ran everything off of. I was the AV guy.
Well, if you want to see if you can get permission, we could definitely.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to host them.
Okay.
Cool.
I'll look into that.
Phil, for those of us that don't know, what kind of work do you do in that realm?
I by day am a half-assed web developer, and by night I am a three-quarter-assed toy maker and artist.
Awesome.
Well, by my count, you've got one and a quarter asses, so
yeah. I'm doing all right.
I think you're doing right. Fine.
Yeah. I make plush, like... Well, I like to say plush is the fancy word for stuffed animals. It makes stuffed animals art when you call them plush. But in reality, they're handmade, and a lot of time goes into them and stuff. And they could be, I don't like to necessarily say about my own stuff, but I like, you know, for instance, Josh Benlongo, his stuff is, I mean, he spends weeks making one piece that they're just amazing works of art. So I make plush and I paint and do prints and stuff. And I'm doing the 365 Bears project is kind of my ongoing go-go right now. So that's the kind of work I do.
Cool.
Awesome.
Of course, if you guys listen to your own podcast, you would know that. Cause
I refrain from saying that. Thank you, Phil.
I can call them out.
Thank you.
You're welcome. No, I think that's pretty much it. We had a good time. We'll be back. I think we're going to go back and try to sell next year. That would be a lot of fun. It was, you know, it was weird. Friday was our panel. and it was really cool. You know, it's really a great ego boost when people come up and tell you how much they like your work and they want to show you theirs and stuff like that. And you can try to, you know, be the wise, experienced person and dole out advice and whatever and take people's cards and promise to look at their stuff and all that. And then the next day, the very next day, I was like in the opposite position. I was on the floor going through what they call the cult yard, where there were a lot of like local shops, like toy shops and stuff, trying to like give them my card and like ask them to look at my stuff and like, can I sell my stuff in your shop? So that was a really weird juxtaposition for me to be like on the other side of it. And we had a very, very tiny, mild, star moment. At the same time I was trying to like talk to the owner of a shop, Seth Green was there buying like a handmade, some crazy handmade, action figure. So that was our big celebrity moment there.
Nice.
Him and his entourage were there buying stuff, and I was trying to sell them stuff, basically.
So, as a comic fan, would you recommend that con?
As a fan, yeah. If you're a maker of comics, and I don't know, like I said, this is our first con, so I don't know if they're all like this because there's just so many more like Hollywood and showbiz panels. There weren't a lot of like business oriented or like constructive, like how to make a comic, how to own a business, how to, you know, there were a couple panels, like there was a coloring technique panel and there were a couple of like Marvel talent search kind of thing. But it didn't seem like there were enough for like the business side of things, like how to be successful on your own kind of thing. And I don't know if they just got squeezed out by the big panels or what.
So you're saying, go ahead. No, you.
Well, as a comic fan, I think it's still a great con. And I think if you're comfortable waiting in lines for things, there are a lot of awesome panels to see. There was a Transformers panel. There's the Avengers panel, Walking Dead, lots of stuff like that. But I think if you're going there as like a maker, I don't know, it's a different story. Another tip though, pro tip, and this may be fixed by next year, but they weren't checking passes to go downstairs where all of the panels were. They were checking passes to get up to the floor, like they were at the escalators. But like there was nobody even near the stairs to go downstairs checking passes. So if you want some free, like, you know, get into some free panels next year, just walk into the Javits Center and walk yourself into a panel. Well, put on a lanyard, you know, maybe, and you just like tuck it into your shirt or something.
How much were tickets to the event?
Well, I got in free because I was a panelist, and Megan got a pro pass because we are business owners. So we just had to show that we owned a business, basically. And she got hers for $10 for a 4-day pass. But the regular passes are, I think they were like $80. Or maybe it was 40. I think it was 40. Because Megan was saying it would have been 80 for both of us, I think. So
still,
if you're a business owner, like if you guys, I mean, you guys probably all own, if you're freelancers, you have a business, you can get a pro pass.
Just but that's a fraction of the cost of what it's, you know, hotel room, though.
Yeah. We are 3 nights in Secaucus, or Secaucus, as the locals say, was what 1 night in Manhattan would have been. And apparently, Nitin from Kid Robot was saying that the prices went up, like the local hotels went up around that time. The total price gap. Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's like at least $300 a night for a hotel near the Javits Center.
Damn.
So. Yeah, Trey, if you're gonna, all your money's gonna go.
So, part of my time in New York, I was in a fantastic hotel in East Village, the Cooper Square Hotel, all thanks to AOL and About.me. So, thank you.
Awesome.
What were you saying, Jason?
I was just gonna say, isn't that about the inverse of the costs of Dragon Con in Atlanta? Like, isn't the hotels in Atlanta are pretty much dirt cheap, right? But then the con is a lot more than that.
Oh, is it?
You should go to that. It's outrageous.
Let's all go to Dragon Con next year.
Let's do it. Live podcast.
Yes.
We'll do a panel.
But don't pay for a hotel. Just stay on my futon.
All of us? How many bathrooms do you have?
Just sleep sideways, side by side. It'll be fine.
Head to foot. Totally cool. No problem.
Yeah, that's.
I'll be the big spoon.
Uh oh.
And sandwich my cats in between you all.
There's a joke in there somewhere.
Yeah,
let's cat leave. Sandwich.
It's pretty fun. Just all over downtown, excitement everywhere.
With Dragon Con?
Yeah.
Have you been?
I've been to bars and parties around it, but not attended the conference.
That's probably the best part anyway, isn't it?
Yes. You still see the fantastic outfits.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
Like, I would be embarrassed to wear a costume or a cosplay at Dragon Con, not because of the fact I'm wearing a costume, but because of the fact that I couldn't make anything that even pales in comparison to the amount of effort these people put into their costumes.
It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
So did you see some good stuff, Phil?
Yeah, we saw, there was a lot of like giant swords and, it was like, there were more costumes where I had no idea what it was, like ridiculous things. And I was like, I don't know what that is. Like, it was a guy he had like a skirt and a bikini top on, but it was kind of like, he looked a little post-apocalyptic-ish. So it must be from some video game or something, but I was like, Nick and I were like, I don't know what he's doing it, but he's owning it.
Nice.
But there were a lot of, you know, like chainsaw swords, and I saw some, all kinds of stuff. A lot of, I don't know. And I realized it's like, there are a lot of people with like kind of half-assed, like, you know, somebody just wearing like a cheap fez and a bow tie, like, oh, I'm the doctor. There were a lot of those. And there were some more, the people that really spend the time. There was one guy, I'm pretty sure he made his own Bumblebee outfit. It looked handmade, but it was really amazingly well done. I mean, he had stilts. Oh. He had a little, like, intercom thing, so his voice came out like a speaker. He had the lights in the eyes. I mean, it was really good. He was, like, 8 feet tall. It was amazing. And he sort of crashed the Felicia Day panel, because like he was standing in the corner and Chris Hardwick was like, oh my god, Bumblebee's over there. And then they had a lot of, like, every once in a while they would always, like, he would say something, and he was, since he had the speaker, he was kind of like overpowering the PA system.
That's awesome.
But he was pretty courteous. He didn't, like, you know, try to take over or anything. Well, but they asked him some questions and stuff.
Was he Beetle Bumblebee or Camaro?
No,
Bumblebee?
No, he was new Bumblebee.
Uh-huh.
The Camaro Bumblebee. But yeah, so there was like some amazing over the top stuff like that. There was plenty of like girls that just needed an excuse to not wear very much, and get lots of pictures taken of them. There was that seems to be sort of a subclass of the cosplay. It's uh-huh. like there are people that really, really care about the characters, and I'm sure there's overlap, but it just seems like there's these, you know, it's like, okay, yes, you're a hot lady. And you're not wearing anything, and you look kind of like some comic book character.
Not high quality, though.
Well, sometimes it is, and that's cool. I can appreciate that. But, I don't know.
Did you take pictures?
And there
pictures?
Was plenty of, like, the, you know, Star Wars characters in the, like, official outfits and stuff like that. And, like, the obscure, you know, like, the stormtroopers with the stripes, and they're, like, a specific, you know, regiment or something like that. They have all kinds of... Those guys, those nerds.
Nerds.
So, yes, there was a lot of amazing stuff. It was, well, another fun thing was watching them, like, you know, we would take the bus to the Port Authority, and a lot of people were coming in that way. So, like, the walk from the Port Authority to the Javits Center with all these people in, like, crazy outfits, and all the locals and the construction workers are like, what the fuck are these people?
That's awesome. These
people with, like, this giant, like, Dragon Ball Z hair and, like, 6 foot plastic swords and stuff like that, just walking through the streets of Manhattan. It's kind of awesome.
I'd like to see a picture of that and just the expressions on everyone's faces.
Yeah, that was priceless.
Awesome.
So I put in the thing about Dart.
Yep.
So Google released the code, showed you how to use it, released a lot of resources on it. And it's totally not what I was expecting.
So this is,
if you looked at it,
this is Google deciding that JavaScript was not good enough and rewriting something that's basically going to work in Chrome and probably nothing else, but is better than JavaScript in some way.
Yes, but it's got a lot more Java and C++ kind of syntax into it than JavaScript. So, they're going to support it natively in Chrome and other browsers that will compile down into JavaScript. But somebody noted on GitHub that if you compile the Hello World application from Dart to JavaScript, it is... Do you want to guess how many lines long?
It's like 14,000, right?
Something it's like 17,000.
That's useful. So, okay. Why don't you tell us, from what you understand, why is this better than JavaScript? And then I'm going to be a curmudgeon.
Kind of a curmudgeon
Go.
Myself.
Okay.
If I understood their points better, and you know, maybe I should, but... It seems really odd to me. I need to learn more before I can defend it.
Do you know what the supposed benefits are?
They believe that JavaScript is kind of like a handicap on the development of web programming. So they have released Dart, and they're calling it structured web programming.
What about jQuery?
Exactly.
I love jQuery because you have a brand new API. And what if they were to put like a native CoffeeScript virtual machine in your browser?
See, that's my issue with it. It's like, if you're going to write something new, how about make it easy to develop on?
Right. I'm a big fan of dynamic languages like Ruby and Python. And that's what I like about CoffeeScript is it just brings a lot of things from those languages right into JavaScript. I've been writing a lot of CoffeeScript lately, and then I try to write JavaScript, and I find myself forgetting all the syntax. Just forgetting to insert curly braces or parentheses.
Right.
CoffeeScript is so great.
I need to get into that.
It really speeds things up after a while. It's another one of those things where you invest a little bit of time in it, it makes it faster. It's like SAS or learning Vim.
Learning how to build one of those cars that Fred Flintstone drives with the.
Oh, it'll pay off yet.
Hey, wasn't there an official announcement about a TextMate 2?
Yeah.
Along those lines?
Wait a minute. What are you saying? Are you dissing TextMate?
No.
Damn.
Yeah. Like, they announced that it's going to be... That there'll be a public alpha by Christmas, I think? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's right.
It's, that's not too promising as something that will be usable. But I'm glad to hear that it's not totally gone.
Yeah.
And it's still a great app, and I use it every day.
Me too.
Yep.
I tried to switch to Vim. I tried to switch to BBEdit. And I kind of loathe BBEdit, but Vim is pretty cool. I like Vim a lot. I don't really want to learn it enough to get super proficient in it, but it's nice.
Just feels like such an investment to switch editors.
Yeah.
So worth it.
Well, sure. If that's your thing. But the only thing that TextMate doesn't do that I wish it would right now, with all the little tweaks and stuff, it would be cool if it was a better out-of-the-box experience, but as it is now, the only thing that I can't really do with TextMate that I would like to do is... split window.
Mm.
And it's not that big a deal to me.
My install of TextMate is I don't know. I did something wrong a long time ago, and I don't remember what it was. But I can't even, like, I haven't updated bundles in, like, I don't even know, forever. And I can't even add, like, the new get, is it get bundles with an S or without an S? Whatever the correct bundle is. That. Yeah, it doesn't work. So I'm still using it, even though it's broken in some inexplicable way. So that's just because I'm lazy, though.
Get bundles is twitchy anyway.
Yeah. I don't know, I'm going to have to learn one of those fancy ways that you guys do stuff with terminal and stuff.
Yeah, man. Get Z Shell, run into new terminal, Tmux, so you can have split terminal panes.
Ah, that hurts my head. I did sign up for, I think I signed up for GitHub, but I couldn't even get that working. I had a friend who's a programmer, who's a Ruby programmer.
You got to get on GitHub. Me up.
What's that?
You got to get on GitHub.
I love it.
I have an account, but he was like, "You got to run this thing so it makes it easier to work on your Mac." And he's like,
"Oh, I see you. I'm following you right now. You're following me."
Yeah, you're the only one I know.
Oh, dude, and I didn't follow you back yet. And now
he's like, "You got to install this thing." And he was on there doing all this crap with terminal, and I was like, "I don't know what he's doing to my computer." And he's like, "It doesn't work. I don't know why it doesn't work." And we tried for like 20 minutes, and something didn't work. So I don't even know if I'm fully like I can't do all the like fancy stuff. I don't know. I'm so behind on that stuff. But I'm mostly excited about being able to put like, you know, things I use a lot and like basic site structure stuff on there. It's like,
oh yes,
a bundle of things, and just kind of when I install a new site, just plop it down there, especially like WordPress sites and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
Have all the files in a theme ready to go.
Nice.
But I will read all of these things.
I'm pasting a bunch of links for you, Phil.
Thank you. It took me so long to forget to finally click. I mean, I could use it, but it took over a year of using it almost every day for it to, like, conceptually just all around click.
Yeah.
The episode of Peep Code on it really, that did it for me.
Yeah, I will, it's a good thing.
I'll get on that. Next week, I'll be an expert.
My first job had us using Darks instead of Git.
Ouch.
Which, I believe, is all written in Haskell.
The hell you say?
Whereas Mercurial, I was using Mercurial for a while, and that's all Python. But then right. Git, I believe, is a series of shell scripts and Perl scripts and other things.
Right. Do you guys, Steven, do you guys use Git or Mercurial?
I use Git for everything I work on.
Does your company use Mercurial or Git?
Well, it kind of depends what department you're in.
Okay.
Both.
Okay. Huh.
Based on developer preference.
Interesting. We're all Git. All Git all the time. No choice.
Yeah, I was just wearing my GitHub shirt earlier today.
Oh, nice. What GitHub shirt do you have?
It's got the I, and then Octocap, and then code.
Oh, yes. I've seen you wear that.
I like that one a lot.
That's a good
one. A lot of times people just don't get it.
I would imagine that is most of the time.
Yeah, you're right. But it's worth it, because when you're in public and somebody does get it...
Then they're in the know.
Instant new friend.
Yep. Okay, Steven, tell us about Push State and PJAX.
I started playing with Push State on a project. I sat at this thing, and I was thinking about ways to write this page, because we wanted to be a single-page app, but... Before that, we want it to be a fully functioning website, and it's not so much an application as a content site. So we got it working, it's plain old HTML content site, and then we wanted it to do like GitHub does, where the URL changes, the content changes, but without a hash bang or anything like that. So after playing around with a bunch of other options, I looked at the push state from Chris Wainstrath, defunct, from GitHub. I believe they use it on their own stuff. And it's fantastic. It's so easy to set up. You can take in almost any existing site and just use call PJAX on all the anchors that have internal links, and your site will just feel snappier instantly. Basically, it gives you an AJAX experience with real URLs, no hash bangs.
Nice.
It is very cool. Because the hash bang is a pretty bad thing. That's all push state is. Have you guys tried out push state for anything?
Not I.
I have not. No.
Yeah, I hadn't tried it until this plugin, and at some point I wanted to do something it didn't support, so I just threw the plugin out and re-implemented it as I understood it to work. And then I realized that I had broken all the back and forward button functionality. So there's a lot more going on than you'd think.
So why is the... tell me why the hash bang is bad.
You just think about like permanence of the internet and those URLs being referenced in the future. And that site has forced itself to always use that JavaScript-driven URL so that the hash bang requires JavaScript to work.
Mm.
Absolutely. You have to have that script on that page that takes that hash bang and knows what to do with it. It's not a like a real URL that just works
without
scripts. That's why it's bad.
So this is like how Twitter does their URLs, right, Steven?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the way I see it, either they'll have to always support that or they'll have to have a script to undo it. But they'll always have to support that forever.
Unless they don't care about permanence. Which is most likely the case.
They've demonstrated that they don't.
Yeah, Twitter may not be a good example for that. Yeah.
Yes, they don't care about anything older than 6 days.
That was a big part of the Gawker redesign outrage. Gawker and all of their affiliated sites were all using hashbangs. And if you tried to go to that URL... In a browser that didn't support it, JavaScript, you'd be screwed. And if you tried to remove the hashbang, you're screwed because that's not a real URL, right? Like maybe if you're building the hashbang thing on top of something that has real URLs and you're just enhancing that, that's okay. But to completely rely on it is risky, especially if you're serving up a lot of public-facing content as opposed to like an application. So that's why it's bad.
Hell yeah.
Push state. Basically, you set up your server to say, if it's push state, just don't render the layout that surrounds this block of content, because the basic layout will never change, but say you have one div called, like, main or something. It's never going to change, right? Everything around it. So that's where you would use PJAX to instantly enhance your site. It just feels snappy.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like it. I'm going to be using that.
That's good stuff.
It's super easy with this PJAX plugin, which you can find on GitHub.
Someone added iSwifter.
Yeah, that's me and my ongoing obsession with the death of Flash. but this guy's actually prolonging the state of Flash. Basically, they render Flash on their servers and then push that out to like a device like the iPad so you can kind of stream Flash applications into, I think it's actually their own application. But basically it lets you play Facebook games on your iPad. So I think they're probably just going for, you know, some kind of acquisition, but you know, one more step to prolonging the life of Flash. Kind of an interesting idea. Sounds like very heavy processing power though on their end to be able to both running each Flash instance and then pushing that out, streaming video or whatever they're doing.
I wonder what the lag is like.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. Interesting.
Have you tried the scale?
No, I haven't had a chance to download it yet.
It seems along the lines of those, like, I watch a lot of YouTube videos, so I see a lot of ads for online gaming where they, like, you don't have to own the games and somehow happens in the cloud. But they say the cloud. I don't know if it means the cloud. But it's kind of the same idea. It just doesn't make sense to me. I don't believe that there's enough processing power to make it happen fast enough for it to be an enjoyable experience. But I don't know. I'd be curious to see this, but I don't play Facebook games, so.
Yeah. I'm not missing Flash now, so.
Yeah. I'm a recovering Flash developer, so.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of that myself. So
have you guys played with Canvas, you Flash developers?
I have not yet.
Yeah, I have with that weather 10K app that I did. It was pretty cool. To me, it was a much more enjoyable experience. You know, drawing everything in Illustrator, exporting that out, and then animating with CSS and all that was, to me, that was much better than any Flash experience.
I found a site that's using it in a really impressive way. I'll paste it in. It's a Rally Interactive.
Kiddo.
Oh, no.
No, that's Ella. Sorry.
Oh, Ella.
That's my dog.
Kiddo is asleep in her crate, which is awesome. So this Rally Interactive, they've got all these triangles with their work. It's like a rounded triangle, and if as you hover it, it kind of rotates, and if you click it, it changes shape into a circle.
Wow.
It's That's really great. Fancy. When I was looking at it, I was thinking maybe they're using some kind of CSS thing, but when you inspect the element, you see each individual triangle is its own canvas element. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool.
And then not only that, but if you use the nav, whether by clicking on About, Clients, and Contacts at the top, or using the arrows, or just pressing the right or left arrow on your keyboard, which is really cool that they do that, you'll see the URL changes in the PJAX way, just using push state. That's where the PJAX plus, like, push state plus AJAX, PJAX. I mean, you looked at the source for PJAX. Actually, I don't see it there. So they're just using push state to give you, like, a really cool experience. Because you can...
Great.
Yeah, you're not getting the CPU overhead either that you would with Flash.
It just feels really fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little crunchy for me, but I'm on an older computer and I've got 1,000 tabs open, so...
What browser are you in?
Safari.
Safari, okay.
Yeah.
Wait, are you on Lion?
No,
I'm not. Oh, that's right, okay.
I'm not either. I haven't upgraded. Is there a Reminders app in Lion?
No.
That would be awesome.
Didn't Adobe announce on the flip side, talking about Kale hoping to rid the world of Flash, didn't Adobe announce some more steps to, I think it's kind of, I don't know if it was actually for like apps or just animations using HTML5 and I guess maybe Canvas Elements or something just last week? Did I read something about that?
What was that?
And I was just trying to kind of scour around for it. I can't even remember where I saw it. It was Darren Fireball or something. But.
I thought it was longer ago than that. But it was something like to create quote-unquote HTML5 animations.
Yeah, but what stuck out about me was the quote from it was, I guess, from a higher-up at Adobe basically just saying, hey, we're fine with getting rid of Flash, too. We're all about, you know, making apps to help create stuff, and Flash is just a vehicle. We're not married to Flash. Understanding the criticism of Flash and kind of admitting to it, it's going on.
Well, Adobe's got deeper problems than just Flash. I mean, just their UI and
Bridge,
the way they do everything. Yeah, Bridge.
I love Bridge. I use it every day.
On accident.
Yeah.
Everybody opens it at least once a day. No one just wants to. I think we've already made this joke. I'll stop.
And no one listens to multiple episodes, Jason.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So I can just say the same thing over and over.
Yep.
Awesome. Dysentery. Ha ha. Yeah, I like the idea of like the Flash developer in me likes the idea of an application to make the pretty things go, but I don't trust. I've never trusted any code that comes out of any Adobe application, so I don't imagine it's going to be great. And I'm going to just want to get in there and like fiddle with it anyway. So
right,
might as well learn how to write it from scratch.
You sound like more than a half-assed web developer, Phil.
When I put my mind to it, I can do some okay things, I guess. I don't know. I get bogged down in a lot of like busy work kind of projects, and I decide that I hate web development, but it's just because I'm not doing anything fun.
Yeah.
But somebody has to do that. For the local companies, I'm like the bargain basement guy, and I do all the shit jobs. So I don't know how I work myself into that position, but it's where I am. Anyway, enough about me. Let's talk about other things.
We had talked about doing like a cooking segment, and I think that happened all of once. And I think Steven put this link in the notes.
Oh, I love cooking.
I do too. Oh, and I would like to. I think we should include that in every show, if we remember. We'll leave.
I was inspired by a meal I had last night. My friend David made the most amazing steak, and what made it so amazing was the sauce he put on it. He said that he taught himself 6 base sauces. I searched around and found this thing. It's actually 5. Most places say 5 sauces that are kind of the basis of everything if you want to be a cook. It shows you, like, there's a basic brown sauce, an egg sauce, a white sauce, and I haven't really mastered it yet, so I can't tell you more, but tomato sauce. And so he made a special sauce that went with his steak, and it just made it, it was something that I would have paid a lot of money for in a restaurant, but it was homemade and affordable.
Hollandaise. That's a kick-ass sauce.
I like to say I mastered tomato sauce. That's it.
You've mastered tomato sauce, Phil?
Yeah, well, I grew up making it, learning to make it, so. But I don't think I would necessarily follow this recipe. I'm not really a recipe follower. I'm more of an improvisational cook.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Yeah, I'm not saying this link is the best. I just felt compelled to add a link.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've
heard 5 basic sauces.
It's definitely awesome.
Have you guys ever made a hollandaise?
I've never made a hollandaise. No. I made mayonnaise.
Yeah, like with raw eggs and all that?
Yeah. It's really easy, actually. You just have to be patient.
Do you do that as a matter of course? Is that your mayonnaise is, you just make it?
I don't make it regularly because it's not really worth it. But I did make, I found a recipe to make it with bacon fat once.
Hello.
Oh, it's a shame. It's a shame Jason Johnson isn't on this episode because when he was my roommate, that's the only mayonnaise we had in the house was the stuff that he made himself.
Fancy, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like homemade mayonnaise.
That's what she said.
No.
What? That doesn't make any sense.
That is nasty, Trey.
I'm sorry.
Johnson would always put just a little bit of mustard in his for, I guess, for flavor or something. But, of course, it had this kind of yellow tinge to it. So if you didn't know, you tended to steer away from it because it looked kind of nasty. Looked like it had gone bad.
I think that's the classic recipe has mustard powder in it, something like that.
Okay.
Well, the Duke's, I think, is the brand. It's supposed to be like the Southern mayonnaise.
And that's about the closest to homemade that I've had.
Yeah, it's a little bit yellowish.
Yeah.
I've done homemade chicken broth, which is a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
How do you do that?
Basically, you're boiling off a whole chicken carcass with vegetables and onion and spices and herbs, and it cooks for a long time on the stove. It makes the house smell really nice, and then basically you filter it out through there's a whole number of different filters you can use, but filter it out and freeze it, and then you have chicken broth.
So how do you how long does it last frozen? It's like indefinitely.
I don't know what the rules are for frozen
stuff. I
think
it's pretty much definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, we do that too. We like to buy whole chickens and make meals out of them, and then we use the carcass to make stock.
That's great.
It's pretty cool.
Once you've frozen the broth, how do you then use it?
Use it to make soup.
I mean, how do you dose it out? Like, do you put it in ice cube trays, or do you, like...
Yeah, you could do that if you want. If you needed smaller amounts for, like, there are some recipes that call for small amounts of stock. But we do it in, like, pretty decent size. I don't know exactly what size, but, like, you know, various size, those, like, Ziploc container things. And
like
I just
a Tupperware
use it for
kind.
A recipe. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
And then I just pop the giant frozen cube out into the soup whenever I'm making soup.
Yep. I got to do that.
Yeah.
So it's literally, so you make a roast chicken or something, and you get all the meat off of it, and you eat it, and then you just put that whole thing in water and boil it for a long time?
Spices, vegetables, whatever you want to put in there.
And it's...
Cook it all day until it boils down, and then drain it out. Yeah.
Put it through like a strainer, just like a sieve or something like
that? Yeah, I just use like a metal sieve, but you could probably use something finer if you want. I end up with like kind of powdery stuff in mind, but I don't really care.
Yeah, I've tried coffee filters and stuff, but it gets clogged up pretty quick.
Yeah.
So it's hard to get a really clean, pure, debris-free stock.
It's delicious debris.
Yes, it is.
It's the stuff that's good for you.
Yeah.
Yep.
We made, my birthday, we had keg of stout from these local dudes who are making beer, and we had a little leftover, so Megan was like, make some stock with that, and I was like, that sounds awesome. And it was the best stock we've ever made. I mean, you know, it was chicken too, but yeah, it was like a chicken stout stock. It was really good. But
that sounds great.
Yeah, love doing that.
I'm convinced.
Yeah, I'm hungry now.
Isn't it like midnight there?
It's not sauce, right? That doesn't fall into the five categories here.
No, I don't think that counts as a sauce. I mean, you could use it as a sauce if you want, but...
It's a broth.
Kind of thin.
It's sauce.
Anybody make anything amazing in the last week?
I have not made anything. We usually cook a lot, but we've been so crazy busy that we've been... I've been making bread for a while, like to the point where we buy like a handful of loaves of bread per year. But just this last couple of weeks, we've been buying a lot of bread because we just haven't had time. My answer to that question is no.
I haven't either, really. I did make some quinoa burgers the other day that were pretty good.
Oh, I want that.
They ended up being more like kind of like hash browns than burgers. They didn't have a burger-like feel to it. But then I put some tzatziki sauce. What's that? What's that Greek?
Tzatziki. That's the good stuff.
Pronounce that, Phil.
I said it tzatziki.
Tzatziki?
Tzatziki.
Yeah, put some of that on it. It was really good.
Isn't like cucumber and yogurt or something?
Yeah, yeah. Didn't have and cucumber, mint. But oh, and mint.
Yeah. So did you just put yogurt on it?
Yeah, it was not full tzatziki, but it was close enough that it was pretty good still.
Yeah. Well, plain yogurt is good. I mean, it's a good. We get that Greek yogurt sometimes instead of sour cream. It has a nice flavor.
Yeah, the recipe I found was like Greek yogurt and. Sour cream and cucumber and yada yada yada.
Right on.
Something has happened to me. Somehow, in being duplicated, I have lost my strength of will. Decisions are becoming more and more difficult.
You say Angela's here?
Yes, Angela's here. She just walked in.
Yay!
Hello.
Hey, Angela.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good.
Hey, she's been out drinking with the girls, so she'll
awesome.
Be happy to talk about cooking.
Perfect.
Had about two glasses of wine, so I'm pretty
spilled. Have you watched the episodes?
No. Oh, no, I haven't.
But you know them by heart.
No.
She keeps insisting she's a next generation person.
I'm a TNG girl.
Oh. But you knew that the cage was Captain Pike, not Captain Kirk.
I did know that. I think any good Star Trek person should know that, so yes.
I haven't been a good Star Trek person until like 2 weeks ago then.
Can you explain how stardates work? Do you know that?
Oh, good question.
Because I don't. Yeah. None of us do.
Me either.
You
know about
stardates? Can you explain?
No, I don't know anything about the stardates. Oh,
forget it.
You're out of here.
Out of here.
Oh, I ought to.
We were promised a bigger Star Trek nerd than us.
Uh-oh.
I know. I'm so sorry. Jason touts me up when I'm not.
I'm sure you've seen these two episodes at some point, though.
Well,
and if not, I have a couple of animated GIFs in the show notes.
Definitely explain the entire plot of each episode.
That's all you need to see.
I've been staring at this Kirk eating a carrot for 20 minutes.
I had to resize my browser to get it out of the window.
That's the problem with animated GIFs is they just don't stop.
Oh.
Well, I have to say, I actually really liked both these episodes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think they were my favorite so far. I really enjoyed The Enemy Within.
I thought that one was kind of over the top, but I guess maybe that's what makes it great.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was definitely Shatner acting.
Yeah. I'm Captain Kirk!
I guess the opening scene with the space dog just kind of stole my heart.
Oh, God.
That dog kept coming back.
I know.
And there was just like, it was holding the dog. It's holding the dog ever so gently.
This is pretty ridiculous. The space chihuahua.
But Jason actually wrote a blog post about that today.
Yeah. It's just something that's always kind of stuck with me since I was a kid. About the aliens on Star Trek. Gene Roddenberry had always been very insistent that their eyes and mouths not be obscured with makeup. And as it turns out, apparently this probably was influenced a little bit by Doctor Who and seeing the aliens in Doctor Who and the actors like kind of struggling to act and somewhat be, you know, interesting characters through, you know, with their faces completely obscured. So Gene Roddenberry said, well, we're not going to do that. You know, I want the audience to feel have some interest in these aliens. So that's where they, you know, they're generally just painted or maybe a little bit of, you know, like big ears or a Klingon prosthetic on their head or something. And, but then I just thought that was very funny that, you know, here's this dog, the old dog's covered up with the dog's face. And it's clearly like a dog in just a big Swiffer rug. Or
and those it just looks like a sweater that like a really fancy, like wool sweater that somebody bought.
The antennae really made it for me.
And the horn. And like the one horn.
The one horn and then that big long lizard tail.
Lizard tail. That at one point Kurt just like kind of grabs and lifts up. For
yep.
A second.
Yep. Yeah.
So the space dog. I was just completely infatuated with the space dog.
Yeah. I like the space dog, all right.
So this is the episode where Kurt gets split into two different people. Like his, I guess, what is that kind of like his id?
Yeah, kind of like Forbidden Planet, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a Next Generation equivalent episode, right? Is the first season Next Generation equivalent episode?
It's an episode where maybe Wesley or Captain Picard gets split into two individual personalities.
Oh,
like an aggressive one and a passive one.
Angela?
I'm trying to think. I don't know.
I don't think there is in the first season.
No, but there's where the theory breaks down then.
Ah, they don't map one to one. Damn it. Where's that bit in the Wikipedia entry? That would be helpful.
Yeah.
This original series episode is most like.
But I have to say I was mildly disappointed because when I saw the blurb on Netflix about it just mentioned a Kirk's evil twin or something like that, and I was like, oh yes, this is the this is the everybody's got an evil twin goatees equals evil.
Right. I was looking forward to that too.
Data and lore, which are
right.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not the episode with Spock and Kirk dueling.
Evil
though.
Spock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, Angela, what episode is that? Number, season, title. Original air date.
Or comes back a couple times.
She's thinking to herself like she knows the answer to that.
Well, it's definitely not in the first season, but it was definitely like in like, golly, I don't know. The first time Lore comes on.
Wait, Lore comes back?
Doesn't he?
You're spoiling The Next Generation for me.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm just kidding.
He doesn't come back at all, no.
Okay, okay.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't he come back? Did he come back in one of the movies? Did he join
no.
the Borg? Am I thinking on...
No, well, that's when he comes back. That's like the later season. Actually, and that's when he... That's when Dr. Noonien Song gets killed, too. Like, when he's... Allies himself with the Borg.
La 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 la.
Sorry.
Those are minor plot points, don't worry. Actually, it doesn't affect the outcome of anything.
And they were all ghosts the whole time.
You pesky kids.
So, but yeah, one thing in this episode that, like, really, you know, we've kind of mentioned about some of the things of these episodes that really, you know, feel, I don't know, antiquated, very out of date, or modern, next generation sensibilities. The treatment of poor Yeoman Basket Weave Hair.
Yes, yes.
I mean, this woman's like sexually assaulted, and no one has any pity on her.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't me.
It's really horrible.
Yeah. Well, you know what's really horrible is evil Captain Kirk's attempt at kissing her. It looked like he was trying to eat her head. It's ridiculous. Like, I expect in these older shows to have these kind of like demure kissing kind of things, but this was like over the top.
Yeah, well, it was the rape.
I'd like to chew your nose off.
It was the Captain Kirk rape kiss.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... But and then they just line her up, you know. She's really just treated very poorly in this whole thing.
Yeah, and then he even says, like, you can go now. Yeah. like she's in sick bay, and they're interviewing her, and he's like, you can go now, or something.
Yeah, she's not like, I'm going to file charges with the Federation, even if it was your evil self, it was still half of you that did this.
Maybe I need counseling or...
And it was the half of him that actually made him a good captain. The rapist half is the one that actually got the job done.
Take a note, kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was
your inner rapist that makes you a good leader.
Kind of an uncomfortable episode.
A little bit.
It kind of was in that regard. Yeah, and then there's the other guy. He falls off of a cliff at the beginning, and also gets a little pity for that.
Right.
But and then he gets the crap beat out of him by Kirk in the hallway, which I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, Kirk's method for attacking him was kind of like just kind of jumping up on a taller guy. I don't know. It struck me as odd, but so Kirk just attacks this guy, pummels him, looks like nearly to death. He gets the Star Trek burgundy colored blood on his hand. maybe that's just my screen, but that blood just doesn't look red to me.
Huh. Yeah, it looked the same for us. For me too.
Yeah. But anyway, he comes back in and he's like, "Yes, sir, you did assault me." And Kirk's like, "For reals?" He's like, "Yes." That's it. That's the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
None of this. I'm gonna shoot you now because you beat me up or anything. He's just, I don't know. Very, very dry and wooden in that.
There's some implausible scenes in this. Yeah.
The fight scenes in general are just so weird. It's like very much gentleman's fighting, you know. It's not modern fighting. Just seems, I don't know, something not right about it.
It's space fighting, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It does come across as kind of like the sort of fighting that you would see in like a play or something.
Yeah.
You know, where they're not even trying to make it look really real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They set their phasers to stun in this episode.
A lot.
First time.
Yeah, they went out of their way to explain that like, several times.
Cycle number one.
Cycle one.
Yeah.
Do not kill.
Cycle yeah, they're basically
stunning strength only.
Yeah, they, not just simply saying set phasers to stun, but like reading from the phaser manual.
Yeah. If right. you'll refer to section 47G.
Step one.
Well, that was like in the pilot episode in The Cage, they said they called warp time warp.
Yeah.
Time warp factor 7.
And that was an awkward little cutscene when they were warping and they're all just kind of standing there.
Yeah.
We're going really fast now.
And it was like everything faded in and out and you could see like the starscape behind them. Yeah.
Going back to the stun thing, I bet it was probably something crazy like the sensors, television sensors back there, like you probably couldn't shoot somebody to death on TV, you know?
Yeah. Well, you can't kill the captain either. Although Evil Kirk tried to kill Good Kirk.
He did blow the hell out of the transport unit, didn't
right.
he?
Right.
But, maybe, yeah, I suspect Kale's right. But again, that's kind of what makes it even just weirder is, you know, there probably was something the censor's saying, well, you can't shoot someone on television. But apparently you can, you know, sexually assault a woman, and that's okay.
That was no big deal.
Yeah, and no problem. Not a problem. That's like, I mean, it's and we see that all the time in Mad Men, so I guess maybe that was just the...
That was the way it went back then.
That's just the way it was.
And we got the good Bones, he's dead, Jim.
It's number two, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes, he did say that. Yeah, I think that if we're keeping count, that's...
I think it's clearly established, the writers have clearly established that that's a catchphrase now, and they're going to use it as often as possible.
Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a blank.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
I'm looking forward to hearing that. Although, who was it? I think it was Dr. McCoy that called somebody a jackass. Was that the next episode?
Oh, yeah, that was... I think that was Mud's Women.
Yeah. That's the problem with watch next episode on Netflix. They all just kind of blend together.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, and this, I mean, it's, it was a groundbreaking science fiction show. So, you know, giant grain of salt, but I feel like they're still not making a whole lot of an effort to like make the science make any sense. Like they just tell you a thing and you're supposed to believe it. And it just really seems like it just seems like Scotty's making shit up. It's like, Captain, the number two lithium conduit's broken. It's going to take 3 weeks to repair. And I can't do the reverse harmonic placement on the transporters with that.
Yeah.
Without that. You know, it's like, I don't know. Maybe because I was younger when I watched Next Generation, I just soaked it all up, and now I'm all cynical and old. And I feel like there's like, I don't know. It feels like it's starting to come together, like they're starting to like, give not that I want technical explanations because obviously this is not real technology, but it has to make some sort of sense on some level, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I was thinking the exact same thing. I was thinking, you know, in the 60s, do they know about viruses and bacteria and how all that works? Because they're certainly not explaining it at all.
Right.
Yeah, well, and that's a good point. I mean, there's obviously a lot of physics that we've figured out since then, so
yeah.
But then again, our phones look like Star Trek phones, so I don't know, maybe we just made the physics look like Star Trek. Not how that worked.
Now, I liked how throughout this episode we have Sulu and his party down on the planet freezing to death, and
apparently at one point, what does he say? It's like 120 degrees below zero.
Right.
Yeah, and he's in short sleeves with a sheet wrapped around him.
Why don't these guys wear damn spacesuits when they go down to a planet?
If it's a planet where it gets that cold, you think they would have at least kind of brought them in a bag.
Contingency plan, right. And then when they get them back on the ship, they're like, McCoy says, there's some minor frostbite and stuff.
And exposure, yeah.
They'll be fine. Like
what I don't understand, do they not have shuttles? That's what brought up the like not explaining things to me. It's like, couldn't they just take a shuttle down and get those guys?
Right. Apparently there's no shuttlecraft on the original series.
Okay.
I don't know.
That didn't come around to like what, Enterprise D or something? Was the shuttle was invented?
Angela.
Yeah, I've been thinking well. Yeah. The Next Generation, I guess, is the first one. But when you see watch Enterprise,
Yeah, they have shuttles in Enterprise.
On Enterprise.
They gave up that technology.
Shenanigans.
Oh, no, that's the previous one.
Right.
In the continuity, it's the previous one.
Yes.
But, it's, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was they gave up shuttles and then stuff like this happened and they were like, you know what? We need those after all.
Remember those little ships we used to have we could land on a planet with? And we just thought, oh, we've got transporters. We don't need them anymore.
Yeah. And we have to run this transporter where if one thing goes wrong, our men are stuck to die on a planet.
Contingencies? Bah!
Because they forgot to bring a heavy coat.
Yeah. Mud's women.
Mud's women. All right. What happened to the guy's accent? Was that part of him pretending to be the captain? And then all of a sudden his accent... He had like this really bad affected Scottish accent when he first appeared on the transporter deck. Platform. And then at near the end of the episode, he was just like the jovial English gentleman. Anybody else notice that?
I did not notice that.
Wow. Well, given the actor's American, it's possible it was just kind of bad acting. I shouldn't say bad acting. Actually, he was pretty entertaining, actually.
He was very entertaining. I mean, he was over the top, but in a good way. I mean, he was just kind of like, hello, yes, I'm Mr. Mudd.
It kind of reminded me of an episode of Batman from the 60s.
Yeah, it did have a little bit of that campy feel to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the women that were just completely messing with the people's mind. Yet another Star Trek original series episode where it's kind of basically sort of mind control.
Yeah, so was it the Venus pill that gave the women the mind control, or as well as their eternal good looks, or what?
Apparently, just these women that when they got really confident, they projected that. Whether or not literally, I guess maybe they could just convince people they were that good looking. I guess it's kind of like the hold your head up high and act confident, and people will think you're confident.
That was the moral of this episode.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you got to think the Venus pill had a little something to do with it. Because even Spock stayed taking the double take, right?
Yeah.
Here's the other animated gift hand. This is Spock taking the double take of this woman and kind of giving him a little. Yeah, I can see why you men would like that, you humans.
I'd hit that.
Right. That's what I actually did a Google search for.
Spock, I'd hit that.
Right.
The German woman was a little kind of creepy, actually.
The blonde girl? Wait, what?
The one with the short hair.
The short blonde hair and the blue dress. Yeah.
Weird sweater dress thing.
The one who, like, had self-confidence at the end. So
Wait. The other one that we don't see from halfway on.
She had the blue dress.
Yeah.
Short blonde hair.
Apparently she did not have the power of Overtray.
Right. German. Why was she German?
She had a German accent.
She definitely had a very thick accent. And I actually looked up the actress's name, and she is German.
Okay.
Trey, if you can find an animated GIF for every single Star Trek episode, that would be totally epic.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Challenge accepted.
Yes. Thank you.
That would be an awesome page right there. Yeah. Entire original series in animated GIF form.
Oh my God.
Oh, we're missing one. I got one for Charlie X, but I haven't gotten any others besides these two. I'll have to work
on
that.
You're only three down, then.
All right. We'll make this happen.
New website.
Yep.
Yeah, you have to get that domain.
It's not a short one. I'm sure it's available, though.
What domain is that, Jason?
The entire original Star Trek series in animated GIF form.
.com.
Unless that one's taken, then you have to get .org or .net.
.tv.
Oh, nice.
Perfect.
Shorten that link a little bit.
Dot TV is expensive, though.
Is it?
I was looking at getting one today. It's like $32 for a year.
Mm.
I was like, man, that's like $19.99 domain prices.
Big money.
Yeah, I think I pay about $20 a year for my .cc.
Mm.
Oh, well.
So, I don't know if there's much else to say about this episode other than that Mudd is a pretty entertaining guy. And he comes back, apparently.
He's got, like, this chest beard.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of disturbing.
You know what it is, like, being a fairly hirsute guy myself? And he's obviously probably more hairy than the average person, but, like, when he shaves the neck, you just kind of have to pick a spot to stop. You don't really have to
You
got to
pick a spot below the shirt line.
Yeah, and he didn't. So he's got this kind of like 1-inch line of hair sticking out. It's like clearly clean shaven right to that point, and then there's just this like
exactly
hard line. Yeah, I noticed that too. That's pretty insane.
The trimmer wasn't invented until 5 years later, I think.
Yeah. He was wearing a shirt with a higher collar when he went to the barber that day.
It must
and then
be
he got
it.
In the wardrobe, and they were like, oh, crap.
It's an alien thing. He's not human.
He's not.
It seems like some of the Star Trek aliens are about that preposterous. Like,
yeah.
He's got a neck beard. That's his species.
He's a small extra wrinkle in the middle of his forehead. Oh, he's a different species.
He's right. A Cardassian.
Right.
Yeah. Or Bajoran, sorry. Sorry. I apologize, nerds.
I actually half expected that big, giant, blue pirate earring of his to have some bearing on the episode, but apparently it was just panache.
That was a big earring.
It was a big, distracting earring.
I don't know if it's significant, but we've talked before about how this series was kind of groundbreaking in, like, equality and roles and stuff, but gender roles and things like that. And I don't know if necessarily refreshing is the right word, but it was nice that, like, the guys were just totally destroyed. But, you know, so in some way these women were kind of empowered, at least for the time, because they had all this power over men, which is kind of cool. Probably not something you saw a lot, although, I mean, it was totally, I mean, obviously sexual imagery, but
right.
I don't know. It was nice to see that the men were not just, like, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I'm sorry. You can edit that part out, right?
No, they I hear what you're saying. They didn't just take them as their property. I mean, they were kind of being sold, but
yeah, there was a little bit of human trafficking going on.
Yeah,
yeah, there was.
They
that
seemed
too.
To be in. They seemed to be in on the deal.
Right.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, they were kind of in charge pretty much the whole way. I don't think at any point that Mudd was like, you know, forcing anyone to do anything. He was just kind of giving these ladies the means to get out of their situation. But even then, Eve, the character of Eve, who is the blonde who we see throughout the whole episode, she's kind of the one who deals with Kirk some. She kind of does assert herself quite a bit there at the end, doesn't she? I mean, she's basically telling the guy, you know, go to hell, I'll show you, you know, that, you know, you want pretty, I'll show you pretty, and you're never going to have it.
And then he gets it.
he gets it.
Right.
And somehow, apparently, the power of confidence does your hair and your makeup. That part I didn't really get.
And gets rid of, like, crow's feet and stuff.
Yeah. Did it put her back in the prom dress, too, as well?
I think she was in it.
Oh, was she? Okay.
I don't know.
Just got sparklier.
Yes. Added several filters to the camera.
There was a lot of camera hazing, fuzzing going on whenever the women were exerting their, was it Venus?
Yeah.
That's just sounds wrong. Exerting their Venus pill.
Using their powers. Magical power.
Magic lady powers.
Alien powers.
Yes, apparently soft focus and star filter means sexy.
Yeah.
Because they used it, at least in the early couple episodes, that a lot of Kirk's close-ups were the same thing, like soft focus and like sparkly.
Oh, Kirk's were?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were. He was all like dark and glistening, and yeah.
These two episodes, some of the well, particularly I guess the Enemy Within, a lot of the focus is on him, whether he was good Kirk or bad Kirk, were like kind of half lit, like half of his face would be in shadow.
Well, especially the dark Kirk.
But even at the end, when it's good Kirk, he's kind of half in shadow. It's like they couldn't afford full lighting.
And also, dark Kirk, a lot of eyeliner.
A lot of eyeliner.
He's going through a goth phase.
Yeah.
I like how they announce on the intercom, you can tell him by the scratches. And they fail to mention that he's wearing eyeshadow.
Well, the other thing, too, is that the scratches change cheeks.
Yeah. Well, no. In the end, it was they must have shot the shot wrong, and they reversed it.
Yeah.
Because it was actually like a mirror image, and the scratch was on the wrong cheek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I was like,
me.
Why does this guy look weird? Like, you know how like when you look in the mirror and then you see a picture of yourself, it doesn't look the same.
Oh, that's why he looks so weird. Okay.
Yeah, because nobody's face is perfectly
symmetrical.
Symmetrical. So you see a mirror image of somebody, and you're like, what is that?
Yeah.
And you can tell it's wrong. So yeah. I also like that this that episode, Enemy Within, was the reappearance of Kirk Casual, the green tunic top.
Yeah, the tunic, yeah.
I still don't get that. Like, why does he have some special dispensation to not be in uniform or have this, like, alternate uniform piece?
I guess they just got him this fancy shirt so he wouldn't go around shirtless all the time.
Yeah. Oh, he didn't get naked in this, did he?
No, nothing was torn in this one, I don't think, except his face.
He was in one of them. He was bare-chested, and I think it was the Enemy with him. He was in sick bay or something.
Okay.
He's not wrestling anybody or anything. He's just bare-chested. I
noticed on the tunic that the insignia, the Starfleet insignia, is like the end of a belt that comes around the back and the side. So it's actually sideways. It's kind of weird. And it's like right on his gut. It's actually like a golden arrow pointing at his gut. Not exactly the best costume design. It's an interesting garment anyway.
All right, then.
Anything else particular about this episode? I was going to say before we got on to Next Generation, because I know Trey's going to want to talk about whatever this is equivalent of, but...
Oh, I don't know.
I did read an interesting story. The actor who plays Mudd, they wanted him to come back to be Mudd in The Next Generation, and he died right before they could film that episode. So they actually rewrote the episode and changed the character a little bit and got a different actor.
Huh.
They didn't actually just have a different guy be Mudd, which I thought was interesting.
And thus Q was born. No.
Is it Crewman Farrell?
Can that guy not close his mouth?
That guy is
every
weird.
Shot he was like, duh.
Weird looking. He's like the Steve Buscemi of Star Trek.
He looked like, I can't think of the actor. Yeah, is this, little Steve Buscemi.
This guy's the proto Chekhov, right?
Oh, I guess.
He's the one who's, he's a little bit, I don't know, southeastern United States or something.
He's warming Chekhov's seat for him.
I guess so.
Don Knotts.
That's yeah.
He looks like a young Don Knotts.
That would have changed the tone of the show a little bit if they got Don Knotts.
Wouldn't it? Get it all I got, Captain.
I want to see that episode now. So we're going to see some Star Trek Original Series Bears, Phil?
Yeah, I'm still way behind. I'm still finishing up my Star Wars ones, but yeah. The next series is Original Series. This week. Tomorrow, maybe.
Awesome.
We'll have
Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Nice.
I gotta finish up a Han Solo and a Chewbacca, and then I'm on to Star Trek.
How many Bears have you done to date?
How many days are... How are we into the year? That minus, like, a week.
Okay. Wow. Impressive.
Yeah, I'm over 300 now, I guess.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, since Angela came right as you guys were finishing that segment, did you cook anything interesting this week you'd like to mention?
No.
What?
You didn't make anything awesome from scratch or anything you'd like to?
Waffles from scratch.
Nice.
Do you have a recipe for that?
I do, but I don't follow the directions every time.
Do you fold in egg whites?
I do not fold in. Well, depends.
She never does it the same way really twice, Trey, I think, is the answer to that question.
Depends if I have eggs, whole eggs, or if I have egg beaters.
Ah.
So who was it? Who was it earlier that mentioned that they don't follow? Okay, was that you? You're not going to follow the recipe?
I think I said that.
Okay,
but see, there's an exception. Like baking, I follow recipes mostly, and pancakes and waffles. We make pancakes from scratch a lot, and we pretty much follow the recipe to the letter. I mean,
I'm such an engineer, and I follow every recipe as closely as possible. I still manage to foul up a lot of them because I really don't know what I'm doing. And Angela, like, just wings everything. Like she will give a passing glance to a recipe if she wants to just kind of glean some information from it. But otherwise, it's just all, like, seat of her pants, and it always ends up really good, actually. So
brave enough when there's some sort of critical chemical reaction involved to wing it. But when it's just like a sauce or a soup or something, I mean, I'll just throw whatever in there and adjust it as I go.
Yeah.
But that's why baking or making pancakes or something like that, I'm afraid to wing it.
Baking is
harder
than cooking.
I made flour tortillas with no recipe. And they were the best I've ever made. And I was like, wow, I should have done this from the beginning. But, and they're not that complicated to make, but anyway.
Nice.
I mean, bulgogi?
Yeah.
Bubble tea? Korean, what?
Bulgogi, Korean beef.
Ooh. Oh, yeah?
I'm sure there's other forms of beef in Korea, but is that like...
Well, it's actually supposed to be like grilled, but the tradition is to use beef.
So it's like a grill, but it's just tons of garlic and sesame oil and sometimes onions. And it's good. I guess Korean ribs aren't really as popular in the East as they are on the West Coast, but...
So sounds good.
We had some freezer beef from our neighbors that we used to make cream ribs. Well,
we didn't make cream ribs. We made bulgogi. Well, we didn't make galbi.
Yeah.
Different.
Sorry. She's right.
Get it straight.
I just warm the meats on a grill. That's all I do.
I think bul means beef, and then gogi just means that it's grilled. So it's like, or bul means meat, rather. So it's just grilled meat.
It literally translates to grilled meat.
But it's traditionally beef. And then there is something called galbi, which is like a beef short rib that you use essentially the same marinade, but it's beef on it. It's like Korean ribs.
So that was good.
And then I made a stir fry from scratch, too. That's pretty easy.
This is all within the past week you've done this?
That was all Sunday.
That was all one week.
Wow.
All Sunday. So yeah, that was a good day.
I guess so.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep.